Hey guys, you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger and Mika Villas, and we're here back for another edition of the show, another week, getting close to episode 200. It's been quite a ride.
We are doing well. Wrestling weekend just wrapped up. We're at the AWE event on Sunday, their debut in Jonesboro. We have more wrestling coming up within the next few weeks, where you may see us pop up. Sometimes you don't know where the FOW crew will pop up, but we will pop up in many places, and of course we will talk about a whole lot of wrestling. We got a lot of big news.
We are everywhere. Are we like ninjas? Possibly, but we're wrestling ninjas, so you know that counts.
The best kind of ninjas.
Let's go ahead and start talking about wrestling, and we got a few topics to talk about. And let's start with the thing that happened, you know, this Monday, the big announcement by Roman Reigns that he's been dealing with leukemia for 11 years. It went away, but it's come back. So he is vacating the Universal Championship. He's leaving WWE, not forever, but to go battle cancer, kick it in the butt, and make a glorious return one day. I heard rumors of an injury or illness, and this was the last thing I expected. I mean, he did a very good job of, you know, keeping away from the public eye, because I don't think anyone really knew that he had been dealing with this in the past. Glad it was gone, but it sucks that it's back. You don't want to wish that on anyone.
It's hard, you know, for him and his family and fans, you know, wrestling fans as well, you know, whether you love him or you hate him. Yet again, like you were saying, you don't want to wish it on your worst enemy. It's and anybody who's kind of been affected by cancer personally knows just how terrible it can be. He's defeated it once. If anything we know about Roman, he will defeat you once, and he will defeat you again and again and again. So hopefully he can Superman punch the crap out of cancer, and we will see him back, when he's ready. The big thing too, though, he is the champion right now, you know? I mean, starting out of Monday's Raw, he was the champion. He's not anymore, so he relinquishes the belt. While he is away, what happens with the Universal Championship? How is the new champion decided? They could do any number of things. We'll talk about that a little bit more later, though.
We've had talks about Roman, and people, of course, have talked about him in the past, but it's a testament to his strength that he was able to perform at the levels that he did. Cancer is absolutely unacceptable. We hope that Roman and anybody in the fight against cancer, that they beat it, and that we see him come back even stronger than ever. This is definitely unexpected. To relinquish the title due to injury is something that we're used to, but just because of the nature of cancer and just how it attacks, it is just devastating for his fans, for the locker room there, the WWE universe. But we do indeed hope that Roman comes back stronger, and as the company moves forward, especially right now, this being Cancer Awareness Month, you hope that a cure is found, and that, you know, we'll see Roman come back sooner rather than later.
So let's go ahead and kind of chat about what we know as to the Universal Championship. As much as it sucks that this thing happened, you know, as always in wrestling, the show must go on. So at Crown Jewel, Brock Lesnar will face Braun Strowman, and they will battle it one-on-one for the Universal Championship. And by the way that today looked, and of course the seeds were sort of planted last week, Braun Strowman looks to be the babyface in this scenario. Already split from Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre. That looks to be now, that's what the future brings. So we've seen them wrestle once on pay-per-view, available on WWE Network, free for new subscribers. So do we want to see it again? Are we excited about seeing this match again, knowing that the first match was not as good as some people hoped for?
I mean, the reason they were making this a three-way was to break up, you know, we've seen the, you know, Roman and Braun and Brock fight each other in multiple singles pairings. So putting them in this triple threat match, as it was originally advertised, was supposed to be a way to kind of make this different and refreshing and new. But now with Roman having to take time off, I mean, it's not retirement, but it's pretty much an indefinite absence. I guess they just went ahead and kept, you know, keep the two top contenders and have them fight it out. Personally, yeah, I'm not too excited about it. I actually really liked the pairing of Braun and McIntyre and Ziggler. But if you're going to make Braun a single star, then you got to get him out there by himself. Not exceptionally interested in the match, but it'll be a match.
So I'm not excited. I wasn't excited about the three-way. I'm honestly not looking forward to seeing Lesnar because you never see Lesnar. He's like the great ghost of the WWE. He appears and haunts when he wants. I understand it's supposed to be a special thing to see Brock Lesnar, but if he wins this title, then, you know, whoop-de-doo. Here we go again with the Universal title missing in action. And honestly, if that's the case, Roman didn't have to relinquish. I understand they had to explain Roman's leaving, but I mean, honestly, let's just go with the Intercontinental Championship being the top belt and the tag team belts and just run with that.
I mean, that's true. It did seem like it was many, many months at a time between Brock Lesnar championship title defenses. Why couldn't Roman just do the same, hang on to the belt? But, you know, I think that, yet again, that goes to the testament of, yeah, of performer that Roman is. He understands what the championship means to Monday nights and to the WWE. So he wanted the championship there and represented and defended, even if he couldn't be the one doing it. So, yes, hoping that Braun wins the belt, just so that we do see the championship, you know, on a regular basis. But Braun winning it at this stage, I think, is almost kind of like anticlimactic. It seems like he should have won it, you know, quite some time ago. And now with giving him a championship run, it's just kind of like the next best thing. It's not the plan that they wanted, but plans change. The show must go on, as you mentioned, Patrick.
Well, the show must go on. They didn't want to hit with the show. The other significant thing I want to talk about Monday night, it was another Shield implosion. Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose defeated Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre to win the Raw Tag Team Championships. And as soon as that happened, Dean Ambrose turned on Seth Rollins, gave him a beatdown, and left them laying. So this whole thing about Dean, he doesn't have a place in the Shield, all these doubts they put in his head, he bought into it, I guess? I'm not sure what all in Dean said. Well, then again, nobody really knows where Dean said it. Right, this way. He's a lunatic. But man, the Shield implodes on the night in which they're already down. And this makes it, I mean, if you're a fan of Shield, this has become the worst night in the history of their life.
Yeah, it's a rough night for you, with Roman having to leave and no timetable of return. And then, so here's the thing I don't get. So, okay, I can understand you know, you're mad at the guy, you know, at Seth, you know, from Dean's perspective, you're mad at Seth Rollins, whatever, but you guys win the match, you win the championship. Why then do you kick crap out of him? You know, you're a tag team champion again. Is that why you're mad? Because now you got to spend more time with this guy when really you just want to beat him up. Now you got to like fight on his same side. That's kind of the thing that they kind of lost me. I don't really get. It doesn't really make sense. But yet again, it's Dean Ambrose, man. He's crazy. The lunatic fringe, whatever that. I still don't really get what that means. Does that mean he's kind of on the edge of insanity? Is that what that's supposed to mean? I don't really know. But it's, yeah, it's kind of weird. It's kind of unusual. But I guess that's, you know, we'll now see them. I don't know if they're going to do something where they fight each other and then winner gets both belts and picks a new partner and we have Judy Bagwell on a pole. Like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know where this is going.
Listen, Judy Bagwell on the pole is not happening. I can tell you,
we're going to get Mitch on a pole, Mitch the Plant on a pole.
It's going to be Renee on a pole, and that's a whole different story.
No, that's on the WWE After Dark network. Well, it's called Renee on a pole. It's a whole. The whole different thing. I think it's more like a fan fiction thing, really. But
well, the fans were not happy with the actions of one Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose, he snapped. WWE had to use their censors. The booing was just crazy loud because once again, the Shield has broken. Ambrose knows he was in his own headspace, and that headspace told him to take out Seth Rollins. I foresee that they drop these titles, they relinquish these titles, and Dean takes the Intercontinental Championship probably at the next pay-per-view. Maybe they pencil that in for Crown Jewel, where, you know, these two go at it. Why the hell not?
So you would suggest that they just relinquish the championships and then just have, you know, another match or mini tournament or something to crown new tag championships and then just have them battle it out over the IC belt?
Exactly. Why hold on to it? And, you know, you can't, after the way he drops Seth, you're not partnering up. So let go of the belts, because honestly, Dean is probably going to be like, I don't care about the tag team titles. I want to be the IC champ, just despite Seth, who is the Intercontinental Champion currently. If you're going to fight your brother, you're going to fight your brother. You don't want to take that little bitty toy. You want the biggest one in the box. Right now, the biggest one in the box is the Intercontinental title.
Well, I guess we're going to have to wait and see what happens. Currently, Seth Rollins is a part of the World Cup happening at the Crown Jewel. Dean Ambrose has nothing to do. It will probably happen at some point. Maybe Survivor Series, if not TLC. But yeah, so that's what's going on. Now, taking a look though, what's going on this Sunday, we have WWE's Evolution, WWE's first ever all women's wrestling show.
Not to be outdone is the Crown Jewel, WWE's next all men's event, Equality Men. You can't just talk about how great women are all the time, okay? Sometimes you got to talk that guys are okay too.
But we'll talk about that next week. So let's check out what we have so far, and here are your lineups. We are going to talk about the finals of the Mae Young Classic, which won't be decided until later this week. So spoiler alert. Ronda Rousey will defend the WWE Raw Women's Championship against Nikki Bella. Becky Lynch will defend the SmackDown Women's Championship versus Charlotte Flair in a last woman standing match. I think that's a first ever for the women. Kairi Sane will defend the NXT Women's Championship against Shayna Baszler. The NXT UK Women's Championship will be defended as well. Io Shirai versus Toni Storm in the finals of the 2018 Mae Young Classic. Trish Stratus and Lita in tag team action versus Alexa Bliss and Mickie James. Natalia, Sasha Banks, and Bayley versus the Riot Squad. And a battle royal where the winner will get a women's championship match. Here are the people so far announced for the battle royal. Tamina, The Iconics, Ember Moon, Alicia Fox, Nia Jax, Dana Brooke, Asuka, Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville, Carmella, Lana, Naomi, Maria Kanellis, Tori Wilson, Michelle McCool, Alundra Blaze, Ivory, Kelly Kelly, and Molly Holly. Quite a star-studded battle royal, if you don't mind me saying so, with some of the best of then and now.
And forever.
And ever.
I knew that was going to happen. You do. You have a games that bring up some nostalgia for Kelly Kelly's and Tori.
Do you really have nostalgia over Kelly Kelly, though?
Yeah.
Do you really get nostalgic for Kelly Kelly?
Ooh, I'm getting nostalgic over Kelly Kelly. Kelly Kelly was the youngest ever Divas champion. He was 19 years old. She was part of ECW, the reboot version of ECW with Balls Mahoney, rest his soul.
And then Mike Knox, she was with him for a little bit and that whole thing.
16-year-olds probably get nostalgic about Kelly Kelly.
People who were 16-year-olds then.
At the time, right, exactly.
They became men in their own bedrooms watching Kelly Kelly on ECW.
Exactly. You want to go back to names like Alundra Blaze, Ivory and Molly Holly, who are pioneers and trailblazers as far as the women's division goes, especially in the WWE. Then you get into your newer era divas of the Iconics, Amber Moon, Alicia Fox, who's an OG in her own right. She's been around for a while. And, you know, these women in this battle royal, again, they're fighting to become number one contender for a women's championship. So why not bring some of your best and brightest and some of your old school people? Because we've seen how excited the crowd gets for this. WWE promised 50 women. This is a named about 40 women almost so far. So we've got some more names to be announced and surprises, I'm sure, that'll happen. But it's a very strong field, and it's, again, giving the women the forefront and the chance to show what they have on an all-women's pay-per-view and to show that the girls do it just as great, if not better, than the boys.
Now, putting Nikki Bella in the main event is not exactly showing that the boys can do it the girls can do it better or as good as the boys.
That's well, Nikki Bella does things better than the boys, and we unfortunately can't show that on this kind of pay-per-view. But I digress.
She may or may not do things better than some of the boys. We don't know. We don't know.
Anyway, back. I'm good.
But it's, I mean, some of the matches yet again are, you know, the Battle Royal aside, you do have, you know, Trish and Lita, you know, returning to team together. You have, you know, this, I mean, what would the Divas, an evolution of women's evolution be without the now Raw and SmackDown standard women's six-person tag match? So, of course, you have to have one of those, you know, the Riot Squad against Natty, Sasha, and Bayley. You know, so you got, you know, I mean, they talk about women's tag team titles somewhere. I think realistically, you have a whole lot more women's six-person matches. So So maybe you should just make women's trios championships. Therefore, not only are you doing something with, you know, giving the women another belt, but you're also making it slightly different, as though there's three people on each team, you know, since you have so many three-on-three matches on the weekly shows.
I think that's a saturation of belts. I mean, you've already got two women's titles already. And if you do that, as far as adding more belts out there, more titles, then you might as well add another show, an all-female show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's true. That's true. They did just add an extra brand, you know, WWE NXT UK with its own championship and its own championship and its tag team championships coming soon. You know, eventually every single, you know, pay-per-view network special you're going to have is going to be, every single match is going to be a title match at some point.
Well, I think the Evolution is going to be a fun show. Ronda Rousey main eventing the show is not going to be a surprise. You know, she's just a big draw. So let's take a look and go over our predictions, which is, I know, the favorite part of their show because we always get them wrong. Well, you guys more than I do, but let me not digress. All right. I believe Ronda Rousey is going to defeat Nikki Bella to retain her championship. Becky Lynch will retain her championship as well. Shayna Baszler is going to win the NXT Women's Championship. Toni Storm is going to win the 2018 Mae Young Classic. Trish Stratus and Lita will defeat Alexa and Mickie James. It'll be Mickie James' fault. And Natalia, Sasha Banks, and Bayley will win the sixth women tag match. Asuka will win the Battle Royal. Because I would like to see Asuka and Becky Lynch throw down. I think that would be a fun fight.
Okay. I mean, I think our predictions are going to be fairly similar on this. I definitely see Ronda retaining, Becky retaining. I do see Kairi Sane retaining as opposed to Shayna winning. I do think that Toni Storm is going to be this year's winner of the Mae Young Classic. Just having, you know, competed at the quarterfinals last year and making it this year, I think it's her year to win it. I don't think you're going to bring back Trish Stratus and Lita just to have them lose. So, yeah, you have that. You have them win. Possibly Mickie James takes the pinfall somehow, leading to another spark, you know, another falling out between Alexa Bliss and Mickie James. I'm going with the Riot Squad and the six-woman tag. And although, yes, it would be really, really cool to see Asuka and Becky Lynch. I think we could still see that down the line. We're going to go ahead and say Molly Holly. Molly Holly's taking the Women's Battle Royal. And then, you know, as technically she's not associated with either brand, so I assume that she would be able to pick whoever she wants to fight. And we would see Ronda Rousey versus Molly Holly at the Crown. Well, no, it wouldn't be a Crown Jewel. You know, SmackDown House show or something. I don't know.
I don't disagree with a whole lot of what you said there. I hope to heaven and high hell that Nikki Bella does not pick up this title from Ronda Rousey. Bella Twins might be money for the WWE, but they are absolute trash in my book. Pardon my French. Becky Lynch is on a roll. I think she retains against Charlotte Flair, of course. I believe that there'll be some tomfoolery in the NXT Women's title match. I don't know what kind, but I believe that Kairi Sane will retain, but it'll probably be a disqualification. Toni Storm, it is definitely her year. Io Shirai is a talent, but Toni Storm has got to win this one. I say that the Hall of Famers have to lose. I think that you make your younger talent, Alexa Bliss, look strong, and that also takes the help of Mickie James. So I'm going to say that while Trish and Lita, they were great in their roles and their Hall of Famers because of it, I think Alexa Bliss has to look strong in this instant and her and Mickie James somehow pick up a win. Riot Squad versus the Motley crew of Bayley and Natalya. Riot Squad, I want them to win. I want them to win, but I believe that Natalya, Sasha, and Bayley will actually win. To the named participants of the Women's Battle Royal, my goodness gracious, I would absolutely positively be over the moon if I like Molly Holly won, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's total and complete nostalgia on my part. So the winner of the Women's Battle Royal, who we have here, I think will be Ember Moon. I think Ember Moon has shown a lot of strength in holding down Raw and everything that she's done so far. And perhaps Ember against Ronda Rousey would be, I'm not going to say it's going to be interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Sonya Deville versus Ronda Rousey doesn't catch my eye. Right now, none of the ladies, as far as being against Ronda, or it could be against Becky, it just doesn't really catch my eye. So Women's Battle Royal, while interesting to see some of them interact, I'm not sure who's going to win and if I'll be interested in that winner. So I'm reserving my judgment.
And that will happen this Sunday live on WWE Network. Don't miss it. $9.99 for everybody who doesn't have the network. Free for the first month for new subscribers. We'll be talking a lot about the fallout next week. Now moving on, New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're on the road to Power Struggle. That will be happening November 3rd. But before then, one of the things that will be happening at Power Struggle will be the finals of the 2018 Super Junior Tag League. And this was going to be a little bit different, unlike previous years. This time, they will not be two blocks. Of course, right now we're halfway into the tag league. But yeah, so there's not going to be two blocks, just one block. And the top two teams with the most points will face off at Power Struggle for the trophy. Here are your teams: Bushi and Shingo Takagi, Roppongi 3K, Taiji Ishimori and Robbie Eagles. We need to talk about that one, by the way. We didn't talk about that one when we were talking about the implosion of Bullet Club. Yoshin Liger and Tiger Mask, Yoshinobu Kanemaru and El Desperado, Volador Jr. and Soberano Jr., ACH and Taguchi, and Kushida and Chris Sabin. Now, before we start talking about anything, Robbie Eagles joining Bullet Club OGs.
I mean, Tama Tonga had talked about scouting opponent, you know, scouting new members across the wrestling world. You know, they saw quite a good bit in Robbie Eagles while they were down in Australia, and have given the young man an opportunity. I mean, Chase Owens, who's now been a member of the Bullet Club for, you know, going on a couple of years now, first made his debut as in the Super Junior Tag League, at the time teaming with Kenny Omega. You know, so even a strong showing could earn you a longer term tenure within the club. Big opportunity for Robbie Eagles, you know, teaming with Ishimori, you know, the former Bone Soldier. Interesting. You know, to see that, just kind of yet again, somebody just kind of come out of nowhere seemingly. But I mean, for my pick, I have to go with Kushida and Chris Sabin. You know, we kind of have a kind of Time Splitters 2.0 kind of with them, as Kushida and Alex Shelley were the Time Splitters, and Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin were the Motor City Machine Guns. You know, maybe it's the, you know, Guns Through Time or something. I don't know if they'll give them, if, you know, if they'll kind of adopt some silly name of the combination of the two tag teams, or they'll just kind of go, you know, Time Splitters 2.0. But Kushida, I mean, we talked to me. He's, you know, he's the ace of the new Japan junior heavyweight division. Chris Sabin is somebody who I don't know if he may get his due for all he's done for helping mold and shape the modern American independent style, not only in tag team wrestling, but in singles wrestling as well. So those two guys to me are the team to beat, the team to hopefully take it and win the junior heavyweight tag league this year.
So that's your pick?
Kushida, Chris Sabin, yeah, absolutely.
Show and yo, I'm going show and yo. That is my pick, man. They're young, they're hungry, they've evolved as we've watched them come back and forth from Ring of Honor back into New Japan. The confidence there, that's my pick, show and yo. I love the time splitters, I do. But show and yo are a cohesive tag team, they're a unit. They've been together for years and years now. Time splitters have as well been together, but they separated. Now they're back. Show and yo for the win.
Yeah, first of all, as far as Robbie Eagles, I definitely think he's definitely a good pick to get out of Australia. Of course, you know, anytime you get that PWG rub, right? You make it there, then
you can make it anywhere. Yeah.
So I definitely think Robbie Eagles definitely a solid pick for the OGs again in this battle of Bullet Club, which is not fine. It's crazy, and
unfortunately hasn't been fine for quite some time. We just didn't know how not fine it was. We thought the big battle was between the Elite, between Omega and Cody, but that pales in comparison between the battle that we're seeing between the Elite and the OGs now.
Yeah, Bullet Club Civil War. I can't wait for the sequel. This might turn into like another seven movie series if they can get the Golden Elite to resign their contracts in January. But yeah, as far as somebody to pick, you know, I kind of got to go with Los Ingobernables de Japón. I mean, Shingo, big get for New Japan and for LIG. I think him and Bushi definitely are got to be favorites. I'm still, you know, kind of hype the Shingo's in New Japan. I mean, not that I don't, you know, that I couldn't watch him before, but I don't watch Dragon Gate, so just keep up with the product, but don't really watch it. Now I get to watch him in New Japan with the best of the best that Japan has to offer, and I gotta say that they gotta be my favorites right now. And but who knows? We still have, you know, a lot of matches. I still have yet to go and watch this match and see what's going on, but I definitely will be doing that marathon watch ahead of Power Struggle. So again, that will be November 3rd, in the middle of the night. Well, we're all in the middle of sleeping, so we'll catch it after the fact. Now, I just wanted to go ahead and bring up a conversation that you guys had earlier on Facebook Live, where you guys were talking about Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment's latest show that happened this past Sunday, Live and Let Die. And there was a lot of great things came out of the show, a lot of things excited for the future of AWE. So let's go ahead and take a listen.
We're Wrestling's Cutest Commentary Team. I am Mika Villas, joined by my life work wrestling partner, Danny Danger. And we are going to talk about last night, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment, Live and Let Die. This was...
To say it was chaotic is kind of an understatement. I mean, we went into it. There was some big issues that were kind of coming to head. You know, there were multiple showcase matches, but I don't think we really expected any of the stuff that kind of came about throughout the course of the night. I mean, I want to come off with some of the big issues starting right away. First couple things, you know, is Slade Porter now possibly injured
ejected from the hierarchy. Shug D, Dunkerton doing the injuring of Slade Porter, and now a member of the hierarchy. That is a very, very heartbreaking one for me. Is you know, I mean, we as a fan and as kind of a representative with the company, I hope kind of put a lot of my faith in Shug to be one of the ones who could step up and help us kind of get the hierarchy under control. You know, they've been running things for too long, in my opinion, and it's just, I mean, it's like I said, it's heartbreaking, you know, that even he could be corrupted through all this.
I mean, is it's almost to a point where you expect it. You went right to the big finish where Sugar Dunkerton is now a member of the hierarchy. But let's go back to the build here. Slade Porter was a member of the hierarchy, and he was not a member in good standing. He had been told that he was the weakest link. Slade Porter had match after match, and the hierarchy does not take kind to losing. And I'm pretty sure he was given his marching orders by Blacklist Uno that you go out here and you win. Slade had a match with Ashton Starr, and he lost. Slade Porter tapped out to Ashton Starr.
He seemed distracted. I mean, Slade seemed heavily distracted going in. You know, I mean, the mental state of Slade Porter has been kind of in question for quite some months. Just, you know, where has he been since his injury, since returning, since donning this much darker, much more disturbed, you know, disturbed mentality, where he's almost obsessed more so with trying to get like this eye for an eye revenge on everybody versus, you know, trying to win matches. And yes, he has suffered a few big losses in his last, you know, couple outings, you know, losing to Owen Knight, in his bid to try to get the Georgia Heritage Championship. Tapping out to Ashton Starr last night. And, you know, I mean, so we get to the end of the show and the hierarchy's there, and Shug comes out to, Shug had defended his title championship against Chris Kronk. Shug had said that, you know, hey, Slade, man, I'm not done with you. I'm coming out. I'm coming for you, and I'm coming for you later tonight. Like, this can't wait. Yeah. I mean, Shug was very adamant. He's like, hey, I'm leaving. I'm going away back to the UK for a few months. He said, so, I'm not waiting, man. Like, we got business and stuff's coming tonight. So he wanted to take it, and he wanted to settle things last night. And he did just that. He went to corner
Slade.
I apologize, but
it's overwhelming. Shug came out there in the midst of the hierarchy to corner Slade. He was brave, and hindsight being 2020, he seemed like a man with no fear, and truly he had none, because when he got out there, the whole hierarchy was in and surrounding the ring. He got right in Slade Porter's face. The hierarchy usually uses numbers to their advantage, but they let it go. Blacklist.
They walked away.
They
stepped
away
out of the ring.
Uno orchestrated the beatdown of Slade, the beatdown, the execution, the excommunication of Slade Porter. As everyone watched, some of them, the hierarchy, in happiness, the rest of us in horror, because that was just ridiculous. You know, I mean, Slade's fingers could possibly be broken. I believe Sugar went for the face. He definitely ripped off that mask. I don't know how protective that covering was, but Shug dug into his face, and that, good God, is just barbaric almost, you know?
We talked about Slade looking for an eye for an eye. Shug definitely went for an eye for an eye of his own. Yeah, he took the mask and he attacked the face, you know, breaking the two fingers. But before the end of the night, we would see Shug raise up his very own two fingers, and then we saw the celebration photos on social media last night of, you know, in the locker room of Blacklist Uno, Adrian Armour, GWC champion Joe Black, Aria Blake, and Shug D all standing there giving the two fingers, celebrating you know, their big wins of the night.
Basically, the hierarchy has gone international, but let's talk about Slade. We talked about Slade Porter's transformation, his mental breakdown, if you will, with him losing an eye, protecting Blacklist Uno from Sugar Dunkerton back months ago. But now, I've been watching the social media of Slade Porter. It's been darker than usual. Slade went and his picture blacked out on the internet for a while. His posts have been cryptically scary. And I'm concerned that come November 11th at our next show, issue 62, that there are going to be some big issues with one Slade Porter.
Well, I mean, it is a few weeks away, you know, but it will Slade be in attendance? You know, I mean, after he suffered the eye injury, you know, he was away for some time, you know, and that's, I mean, an injury in itself is difficult for an athlete. You know, it's, you have to heal as much mentally as you do physically. And sometimes the physical scars will heal up a lot faster than the mental scars. And a young man looking for, you know, kind of lost in his own right, you know, suffered a lot of mental scars from the eye injury. Does he need more time to kind of take this out? I mean, okay, so Slade gets ejected, but when Slade is in the ring and he's suffering and he's alone, who comes out to check on him? Who comes out to console Slade Porter? And that was Carrie Awful. Okay, Carrie and Nick had, you know, had their, you know, miscommunications at last time we were at Opera, and cost, you know, when Chip Day came in, and so Chip Day comes in, kind of runs amok, and causes a miscommunication between the Carnies. Nick blames Carrie after the match of, you know, Uno and Armor able to pick up the victory there based on the miscommunications. The Carnies get into an argument, and Nick Iggy leaves Carrie Awful, lays him out with the cutter, and, you know, celebrates, and they, as far as everybody knows, they left separate, and I don't know if they had really spoken since. We saw the promos, you know, of them, Nick, you know, not talking about no remorse for his actions and what he did to, you know, to family business, to his old friend, and, you know, and we saw a very emotional, dark. A very dark and emotional post from Carrie, you know, Carrie Awful talking about his own mental state and, you know, what it means to be Carrie Awful and what, you know, what part of him is part of the carnival and what part of him is like a loving husband and, you know, these kind of things. So he was very, very conflicted with where his life is going with, you know, his best friend or with his family and, you know, the circus is his family and wrestling is his family, like where his head was at. And Nick was remorseless. He said, dude, I don't want this sad Carrie Awful as my partner. I want the gargoyle. I want the and guy who's happened? Just as remorseless as I am.
What happened last night? So we got the sad Carrie Awful. We got the sad
Carrie
Awful.
Carrie came out with his mask in his hand. You know, he came out in, you know, not in the usual kind of matching gear that that he and Nick would wear as the Carnies. You know, Carrie came out with his mask in his hand, getting bullied by Nick almost, and put the mask on, get angry, get mad and all this, and Carrie kind of abided, but
was it bullying or was he trying to fire him up? I mean, this is a person.
One man's bullying is another man's stern coaching. You know, like, you know, the football coach on the field gets in the players' faces and yells at him, and he may think he's trying to fire him up, but sometimes those players say, "Man, that you kind of crossed the line between trying to fire me up and just being a dick." You know, and yet again, so whichever side of the coin you're on, that's, you know, that's really hearsay, I guess. But I mean, Nick probably thought he was trying to fire Carrie up. Carrie in his, you know, whatever mental state he's in, probably saw it as Nick bullying him, trying to boss him around. And it, you know, although the team of the hierarchy and the Carnies got the win over Dayway,
the win wasn't, you know, the big issue here. It was the,
well, absolutely not,
almost dissolution of the Carnies, because again, these two men during the course of the match, they were teaming with their literally their mortal enemies in the hierarchy. And during the match, Nick Iggy didn't even look at Kerry after he saw that he got that Kerry awful. He tagged in Adrian Armour. He tagged in Blacklist Uno. He didn't go to his partner. That right there is the story. Because at the end of the night, as you said, the craziness that ensued where the hierarchy, they victimized Kerry Awful, and Nick Iggy didn't look back, did not go to the aid of his tag partner. He walked away. Walk away, which is another story for later, but he walked away and he let Kerry Awful get decimated by every member of the hierarchy. And now Kerry was in a bad headspace already before leading up to last night to our Live and Let Die show. Now as we go into issue 62, issues is the name of the game because there is definitely some issues right now with Kerry Awful. If you check out his social media, especially his Twitter, I don't...
It's been very strange. He's putting, I mean, some of the text is changing varying fonts. It seems to be going forwards and backwards. The headspace of Kerry is, you know, I mean, we may see more of that at issue 62, but so the Carnies, you know, seemingly separate on different pages now.
Definitely, you know, on different pages.
When Slade gets kicked out by, you know, by his former friends, Kerry Awful, who recently kind of essentially got booted by his former friend, comes to his aid, and that was one of the last images we saw of the night was you know, Kerry, you know, no mask. I mean, Kerry in street clothes. They're consoling Slade after Slade had been, you know, beaten and broken and essentially left for dead by people he thought were his family and his friends. I mean, maybe they kind of find some camaraderie in each other. We don't know. We don't know what's going on with them, but we do know a couple of matches were announced for issue 62, you know, our return to Opera, November 11th. The Lucky Seven Scramble will return. Now the Lucky Seven Scramble for some of our newer fans is an AWE creation. It guarantees whoever wins this gets a championship shot at the GWC Championship at Show of the Year on December 27th, our biggest show. Last year's winner, CB Suave, went on to face Chip Day in a losing effort. But, you know, I mean, it saw the stock of CB get raised very heavily. And, you know, I mean, CB went out there and gave it his all. He was fighting the flu. He visibly and literally, not figuratively, literally got sick in the ring. I mean, he vomited in the ring mid-match, continued to fight for another 10 or 12 minutes after that. CB stock got risen. This could do a lot for whoever it is. So the Lucky Seven, it starts out as all seven guys in, kind of, you know, lucha scramble type rules, eliminations, pinfall or submission until we get down to four men. And then it is a fatal four-way with the next pinfall winning and that person being awarded the GWC shot at Show of the Year. So we've had six people announced for that match. Mika gave that announcement as she was handling double duty. For those of you who were there, you got to see the ring announcing debut as well as being my commentary partner as she was kind of running to the edge of the stage, then running back to the booth, running to the edge of the stage, then back to the booth. I mean, some of the names that were announced, those first six, I mean, right top two of the list, Nick Iggy and Kerry Awful, they'll be in singles action against each other. You know, I mean, realistically, that match could favor a team to some extent. You know, maybe in past times, I would say they would give them an advantage. But I think they may be too clouded with fighting with each other to really notice how important the victory could be and what it could mean to, especially, you know, if they're going to go their singles routes in AWE, you know, you want to be at the top of the mountain. You want to get a shot at that GWC. Some of the other names, who else did we have announced for that?
You already mentioned CB Suave, as well as Nick Iggy and Carrie Awful. Eddie Kingston will be entering the Lucky Seven. Impact Wrestling star will be in Atlanta on November 11th, part of the Lucky Seven Scramble. Chip Day, former GWC title holder, I'm sure he will be there, and I'm sure he's going to be giving it his all to go after this win to get back in title contention, as well as Effie. Effie will be in Atlanta November 11th as part of the Lucky Seven Scramble. Effie and Ashton Starr have been in Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment in a ring, and those two put on one hell of a match. So now Effie is entering his hat into the Lucky Seven with a chance to win, to become the number one contender for the GWC title. So we've got a list of who's of talented individuals who are entering the Lucky Seven Scramble coming November 11th, and the storylines there.
We still got one more name,
right?
You know, to be entered. We don't know that person. We don't know if it's still just being decided. We don't know if maybe they just kind of want to keep it a secret. You know, we don't know if trying to hammer out the details to bring in somebody, you know, as kind of this wild card. Maybe they wait and, you know, I mean, I realistically could be anybody up and down the roster. Could be somebody coming in for the first time, you know, kind of using their accolades they've received elsewhere as kind of an entry into the Lucky Seven. The match is usually very, very chaotic in nature, just based on the type of match that it's in.
Yes.
You know, when you have seven people in the ring and it's elimination, then it becomes a first, you know, fall, then it becomes kind of a sudden death style. When you get down to four men, it could be anybody, but that when you have so many different elements that are against each other, you know, Eddie Kingston's been wanting to get his hands on Chip Day. You know, at the last time we were at Opera, Eddie Kingston had some very, very, very strong words, not only for Chip Day, but also for some of the fans at ringside who were kind of giving him a little crap. But Kingston said he said he wants Chip Day. He said he wants him in any kind of match where Chip Day is unable to run away from him. So he wants, you know, he threw out, you know, barbed wire, throughout cage match, throughout, you know, any kind of things, you know, that he can get away, that he can get Chip Day and Chip can't run away from him. So that's what Eddie Kingston's going to be going. I understand Eddie Kingston knows what the GWC means, but he really wants to get his hands on Chip, as he feels Chip cost him the GWC, you know, win a couple times against Joe Black. And so Eddie Kingston looks to get his hands on Chip. Chip, you mentioned, wants to get back into title contention. Then you talk Nick and Carrie, trying to rip each other apart. You know, Effie is kind of the wild card here. We've seen him a couple times, you know, but we're not really sure what he can bring in this kind of match to Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. CB Suave, last year, he pretty much played kind of the spoiler. He kind of hit out. You know, and once it got down to the fatal four-way, he kind of snuck in and, you know, some would say kind of stole the win, but he earned himself the GWC championship. So he has experience in winning this match. You know, maybe he brings in new elements and kind of new strategies. And I mean, he could very well win it twice, you know, win this back-to-back years.
There's a possibility, but there's so many strong things happening there. And we talked about the things. There's so many stories within the GWC title hunt. Let's talk about the GWC title holder right now, Joe Black. Joe Black took on a man that I call the gatekeeper of the Southeast in wrestling. He took on Tyson Dean. And
He made short work of Tyson Dean. I mean, Tyson Dean is a very tough competitor. He's won titles in just about every promotion that Georgia has. You know, he's been a stalwart here for many years. But and he tried to bring the fight, but Joe shut him down and shut him down hard. And Joe's looking to, you know, he wants to challenge himself against people from his past. You know, that's so he wanted to prove he can beat one of the best in Georgia, but he's now going back to a person in his past. a man that, you know, he kind of, they kind of broke into the wrestling industry around the same time. They fought each other both, you know, multiple times earlier in their careers in the Carolinas. At the time, the guy was known as the Chiva Kid. He has since dropped the mask. He is Andrew Everett. Most people would recognize him from his Impact Wrestling Tag Team Champions. He's also made many appearances throughout, you know, bigger, some of the biggest independent promotions in the United States for PWG and Evolve. Sure. And yeah, up and down the Carolinas. You know, Andrew Everett also having made a former appearance for Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment at our first homegrown show. It was actually my first AWE show. Andrew Everett getting the win over Chip Day at the time. Was it Chip? No. Goodness gracious. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I think it was Andrew Everett.
But either way,
it's been well over 2 years since we've seen Everett. And he'll be coming back as, you know, he's gone out and he's made a name for himself. But Joe wants to not only test himself against some of the people from his past, but he also wants to test himself against the biggest and the strongest. So once Joe became champion, you know, he put in this kind of request line of people that he wanted to fight, to defend his championship, to prove himself against. The championship committee was looking into handling this, to trying to contact some of these people and bring them in and schedule them in. But we got some pretty shocking news today. I mean, I was in a meeting earlier today with the rest of the championship committee, and some management style changes for Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. Now in the past, we have had the championship committee. The championship committee is now a thing of the past. It was President Paul Coldhard. It was Josh Wheeler, the live event coordinator, you know, promoter of AWE. As myself as voted in as the fan liaison to the championship committee. And then it was two unknown member of the hierarchy. Okay. Unnamed. They refused to be named specifically, but they are supporters of the hierarchy.
The shadow government.
Yes, the part of more and more of the shadow government, but it had kind of been brought up by, this morning by the members, the hierarchy side of the championship committee, that President Paul Coldhard has not been at several of our last events. He has, you know, he's attending to business elsewhere, and he has not been at the events. So who is in charge when those events happen? Who's making calls? Now, in the past, there's been several times where Josh Wheeler and Josh has kind of briefly consulted me, and, you know, as two out of five, we kind of make an executive decision on the fly. One of those last year was suspending James Drake and Anthony Henry. They are now our tag team champions, but prior to that, they were suspended for viciously attacking an AWE official. Josh Wheeler made the executive decision to have them suspended indefinitely. Paul Coldhard said no, and he pretty much, as president, vetoed that decision and said, "Hey, man, these guys are, you know, yeah, well, I don't support what they did, but these guys are money, and we got to have them here." So
it was a system of checks and balances.
Led to some power struggles. So, the hierarchy, you know, wanted to change some things, and it came down to saying that no, we weren't going to kick Paul out as president. You know, he's still the president of the company. He's doing a lot of things. His schedule does not permit him always to be there in person at the live events, handling the business. He handles a lot of different projects, a lot of different things. So it was brought about. It came down to a 3-1 vote that the championship committee be disbanded. So there is no longer a championship or matchmaking committee within Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. President Paul Coldhard has the say. He is in 100% in charge right now. Except, of course, when Paul is not available for events. Blacklist Uno has been named as the interim president of Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment when President Paul is not there.
So that means basically the hierarchy is in charge, that the hierarchy, the inmates are running the asylum. So you have Blacklist Uno in charge, the GWC title holder is a member of the hierarchy. Let's talk the Roar division, where last night we had a member of the hierarchy be a special guest referee in the match and take charge and kind of go, I can't say overstepped her bounds, because in a Roar, there are no rules. When the ladies of Roar step into the ring, there are no rules. If you're not familiar with our product, Roar is our women's division where literally and truly any and everything goes. We've had some questionable calls at the discretion of the referee, but basically things like rope breaks, illegal objects,
pinfalls outside of the ring. There's no goddamn rules. That's the tagline we use for Roar. So it's up to the referee if they want to follow the competitors to the outside and count pinfalls, or they just want to stand in the ring and let them fight it out and then make them come back into the ring to do pinfalls and submissions. Yes, we've had chances where referee has tried to interject themselves and take away a weapon from another competitor. Or we've had them count while people are in the ropes or not in the ropes. Yet again, it's been up to the discretion of the referee. And right. That in itself has led to some controversy.
Last night's referee was Aria Blake, again, a member of the hierarchy. We had a match between Ruthless Lala and Zeta Zhang. Lala coming in from Bidaho, New York. But Lala coming in as the Queen of Lariat. She's someone that Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment officials at the time had their eye on. They had watched her, you know, kind of destroy girls throughout her tenure here for the past 15 years. And they said, let's bring her to Atlanta. Atlanta loves strong style. We are Southern strong style as far as our wrestling goes. Our Roar division has no limits. They have no goddamn rules. Let's mix it up some. Let's bring in some more competitors. Lala comes in. Zeta Zhang is a person who's been part of the Roar division, and of course, Aria Blake. Aria was questionable in her reference skills, to say the very, very least.
Biased is entirely an understatement on that. There was inconsistency within the counts. Exceptionally quick when Lala was going for pins on Zeta, and when Zeta was trying to make the cover on Lala, Aria was saying, "Oh, I can't because my shoulder's bothering me. I can't get down there and get fast enough. I'm counting slow," refusing to count. Eventually, Zeta would lock Ruthless Lala on a submission that Lala could not escape from and submitted. And Aria, I mean, kind of called for the match to end, kind of didn't. But after that, as Zeta was celebrating, Aria then kicked her in the head. And restarted the match, and then pinned and counted the pin for herself over pinning and getting a win over Zeta. So we kind of had two matches in one kind of scenario there.
Two Roar matches.
Matches back to back. I know Zeta was already looking to get her hands on Aria. Felt that Aria had kind of cheated her out of a win at our last show, and we can say that Aria is doing her best to get under the skin and play some of the mind games that I, you know, no doubt learned under the tutelage of the hierarchy. She's using those to her advantage. I mean, if Zeta can catch up to her, I'd hate to see what happens to Aria once that happens. I think Zeta, you know, is very dangerous. I think we haven't really seen all that Zeta Zhang can do in Roar. You know, I think the wrestling world hasn't really seen all that Zeta Zhang can do.
The hierarchy is dangerous in itself, and Aria calls herself the first lady of the hierarchy. She says she is the queen of Roar. So, with Blacklist Uno in charge, with the hierarchy at the top of the Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment Mountain, there is a lot of trouble for, I think, anyone who stands against them. You have to consider that right now there is no one defending the honor of Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment, that the hierarchy is literally going to run roughshod. And anybody who is crazy enough to go against those numbers, we've seen it in the past time and time again, the hierarchy will cut you down.
Well, there is one who I know is looking to stand against the hierarchy, as she has, at the last time we were at opera, she was haunting the hierarchy. I don't know if she has an army that she can amass against them, but seeing the things that she can do, she may or may not need an army if she can kind of haunt and pick them out one by one. But we're referring to Soo Young, and I don't know if she's. It's always difficult to understand the motives behind Soo. You know, she's. I wouldn't say that she would be fighting the good fight, but she may be. I mean, she's looking for revenge, basically. They tried to bring her in and use and kind of chew her up and spit her out, and she essentially turned against the hierarchy. And then they stopped the Red Wedding from happening between her and Sugar Dunkerchin.
And that's a good point, too. You have Sue, who is going to get married to Sugar Dunkerton. Sugar Dunkerton now a member of the hierarchy, who is, in essence, definitely against. Where does that leave him on her radar?
Well, that's very true. That might put him, you know, I mean, it was brought to the attention that it very well may have been Slade Porter who was kind of given the marching orders to do what he could to obstruct the travel of Sue so that she would not be able to make it to the wedding, and she didn't. She didn't make it to Southern Fried Gaming Expo. She didn't make it to either night. You know, the wedding ended up turning into a beatdown. That's where Slade Porter broke the fingers of Suge, forcing him to go to the UK to seek a hand specialist. And we don't know how much, you know, how long, if there's been some kind of longer plans with Suge and the hierarchy, or whether it was literally a last night in the moment kind of decision once, you know, when Uno was coaching on Suge, trying to get him to injure Porter, you know, he gave Suge the words that he claimed he'd longed to hear. And that's, he said, "I respect you." He told Suge, "I respect you." And Suge then went to injure Slade Porter, and, you know, celebrated with them after. So I don't know if it was in that moment that Suge decided to join, or whether there were longer plans and some kind of longer game. You know, we talk about the shadow government and the hierarchy kind of conspiring and getting in the minds of people. And so Sue goes, Blacklist Uno is kind of number one on her hit list. But, you know, once that she sees kind of what's become of Suge, you know, what does he become, you know, public enemy number two as far as her hit list goes. You know, he'll be in the UK until at least January. I think he's got a couple more, Suge's got a couple more bookings this weekend, and then he's back to the UK to defend the title pro championship some more. But now, I mean, heck, now he's representing the hierarchy, taking the hierarchy worldwide. But once he returns, you know, does Sue then start gunning for Suge as well?
Well, that's yet to be determined, but we did have a championship here. Owen Knight defended the West Georgia Heritage title. We talked about that with CB Suave. We had a couple tag teams kind of show their finesse. We had Fabulous Fitness take on the New Eurekans. These two teams, Fabulous Fitness, we've seen before. New Eurekans were new, no pun intended, to Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment, and they did a really great job. I mean, all of these
part of the Live and Let Die series. You know, the show is Libra season, but it was part. There were several Live and Let Die series matches, and this being kind of one of those. You know, getting a showcase for some talent, some newer, some returning, some haven't seen in AWE in a long time. Getting an opportunity to kind of show off what they could do for the Fanatics and. And you know, wins and losses, of course, are very, very, very important in Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. So the winners may see themselves getting future bookings, but also a strong showing could see you getting another opportunity. So you know, the names are kind of being reviewed, and you know, fans, if you have any kind of you know, the ones who were there, if you saw anybody you liked or didn't like, kind of let us know, you know, myself or Mika at shows, or you can, you know, I mean, we're not too hard to find. You can kind of let us know, and we, you know, can pass that back to management as saying, hey, you know, these guys, some of the fans want to see again. They said, you know, we've seen enough of this guy. We don't want to see him anymore. However, you know, we want to handle that. And then these, of course, will be taken into consideration. And that's part of the Live and Let Die series. I mean, as management, they can watch, you know, footage can be watched on people a bunch of times, but you don't really know until they come to your town, until they come to our house, until they taste Southern Strong Style, how they can really fare here in front of the Fanatics. So, you know, we could, you know, eventually we'll, you know, we may see some of these folks back, you know, given bigger opportunities down the line.
Speaking of coming back, we had Bishop King come back. The AWE OG stepped into the ring with another new face. Mike Reed showed up and tried to show out there in Atlanta here at Furnace 21. We had our event last night, Live and Let Die. And Bishop King, AWE OG, with that New York attitude we talked about. Tell us a little bit about Bishop.
Well, Bishop, he calls himself the AWE OG. He was, you know, he was in the within the first season of AWE. You know, we saw quite a good bit of him. He was actually featured in the original To Be the Man tournament to crown the first ever Georgia Wrestling crown holder. Of course, he's not successful in that, but we really hadn't seen much of him since. And he made his re-debut last time at Opera in the Scramble match, looking for the number one contendership for the Georgia Heritage Championship. Not successful there in that attempt, but last night against Mike Reed, he was successful. You know, it looks like he wants to come and he wants to stay and he wants to, you know, show that the AWE belongs to him, man. I mean, that's how he kind of, the swagger he kind of brought is, hey, man, this is my house. Like, just because I haven't been here a while doesn't mean this hasn't been my place all along. So
forget about the Tims that he brought. He walked all over into a victory last night. It's a little questionable. We talk about those Tims being perhaps weapons, but you know, sometimes we let things go. We live, we let die. But somebody who's not letting something go, who's striving for championships, making these wins, which do count in Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment, Ashton Starr. Ashton Starr is on a mission. He wants the West Georgia Heritage title. He has said that numerous times on social media. He said it in person. He wants to face on night for that title. And he picked up a win last night over a very game at the beginning of the night, Slade Porter. And I think Ashton has more than established himself as a serious competitor and someone who is willing to up his game. Last night, Ashton Starr submitted his opponent. And that's something we've not seen in the past before from him.
That's very, very true. Ashton adding, you know, a lot of new facets to his game. I mean, we look over the last several months and we've seen a lot more athletic, a lot more agile, a lot more death-defying aerial-type maneuvers out of Ashton Starr. And then last night showing a new ripple to his game in a submission, you know, kind of this, like a double Fujiwara armbar type submission, forcing Slade Porter to submit. I think he proves a very, very difficult opponent for Owen Knight. I think they kind of they kind of know each other fairly well, just from, you know, in the past, you know, they've been around, they've both been in AWE for several years around the Georgia scene, the Southeast. You know, I think they've possibly even, you know, trained together some over the course of time, but I think they've both grown a lot, and when that match finally comes to a head, I know it's going to be very competitive. And I think Owen is, you know, the working team captain, and he's going to put in his work to be in top physical form. But I think, you know, Ashton may or may not still have some more tricks up those sleeves.
And that's going to be very, very interesting to see. So basically last night, Live and Let Die, Libra season is indeed crazy, but it is coming to its end. We are moving forward to Show of the Year, which will be December 27th. Show of the Year is our WrestleMania for comparison purposes. But before we get there, on Sunday, November 11th, Veterans Day. We thank all the veterans listening and performing in and around the world for their service, but we're going to have a show, something special. We're going to have issue 62. We've already talked about it, but just to recap, the Lucky Seven Scramble will be happening at issue 62. We've got the names of the six of the seven competitors that will be competing: CB Suave, Chip Gay, Effie, Eddie Kingston, Nick Iggy, and Carrie Awful. We'll be in an Lucky Seven Scramble, but our big, big match, the match that is for the Georgia Wrestling Crown title, will be Joe Black defending his title against Andrew Everett, former TNA Impact Tag Team Champion. Andrew Everett will be at our show at the Opera here in Atlanta, Georgia on November 11th. There's a lot of stuff happening, guys. A lot of moving parts. Buy a ticket to the show. You do not want to miss our events. Our events are live events. You will find content online. There'll be clips. You will not get the full and whole experience of an Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment show unless you are there in person. Our venues are beautiful and just awesome. Opera Nightclub has been a great partner to us. Opera is one of the best venues here in the Southeast. We will be rocking that on November 11th. So definitely get your tickets. Do not wait. Come out and see us. So right now, we're going to call this the night. We're going to wrap this up. We are Wrestling Kids Commentary Team. That is Danny Danger. I am Mika Villas. We're going to talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
All right. So yes, AWE. The next show will be November 11th, back at Opera, Joe Black versus Andrew Everett. One of my favorite matches, the Lucky Seven Scramble is back. Can't wait for that. And much more. Get your tickets today, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment, on the Facebook machine, on the Twitter, ATL Wrestling ENT. The links will be up there. Get your tickets. Be there. Don't be square. We'll be there. I know that for sure. So it'll be a lot of exciting things. So make sure that you missed it. You just heard all the things that you missed out. But you don't want to miss out anymore. So make sure you check that out. It's a great live experience. And we have a great time every time we're there. That is the show for tonight. Let's go ahead and wrap it up. Make sure you subscribe to the FOW Radio Network on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. Make sure you follow us as well on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at DannyFNDanger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.